Just the perm mask.
So I don't have a formal introduction to this, but is anyone just trying to understand where we're coming from familiar with Hari Kedem? Ever learned the book before? Oh, okay, good. I don't think we've met yet. What's
Harrison,
right? You were an IDF?
Yeah.
All right, welcome back. Rosal Avichik did not write this. In fact, we don't have a lot of Torah writing from Rosal Avichik. His most famous writings we usually see are his Machshava. We see Lonely Man of Faith, Halachic Man, maybe we've heard of Kol Dodi Do Fake. A lot of people like to look at the chapters there on Zionism. But what I really want to do is show a side to Rosal Avichik that's not really emphasized outside of the walls of the YU-based Medrash, which is Rosal Avichik, in addition to being an amazing theologian and a philosopher, he had a lot of really great Torah as well. In fact, one could say that's primarily what he was. He was primarily a Rosh Yeshiva. And what he was spending most of his time doing wasn't teaching Jewish philosophy. He actually was spending a good chunk of his time teaching Gemara and teaching rabbinical students at YU. So this book, Hari Kedem, here, it's an excellent book. What it does is it goes in the order of the Moadim, it goes in the order of the different holidays throughout the year, and it gives Rosal Avichik's lumdus on the different holidays. So lumdus is it's hard to explain. It's basically the way that people learn in yeshiva. You go to a traditional yeshiva, traditional Ashkenazi yeshiva, you may have heard that they learn Brisker methodology, they learn the term lumdus. It's a categorical way of making sense of Torah and explaining. Instead of like what we could do is we could go through right now all the different halachos of the holiday of Purim, but we won't necessarily understand why we do certain things, what the themes are behind them. So what Rosal Avichik is going to do in Hari Kedem is he's going to show us what the themes are, what the reasons are behind what we do. And one more thing, an interesting fact about Hari Kedem, you know, I printed out only the relevant parts we're going to learn together today. But if you look at the beginning, it's not written by Rosal Avichik himself. It's based on his shirim. There's a person named Rav Shurkin, who's a Rebbe at Torah Shmoshe in Israel. It's a Haredi yeshiva. My twin brother went there. And so he wrote up this sefer. It's actually a really funny thing, because if you go to Tomo, Rosal Avichik is like persona non grata in the yeshivish world. When I went to Darach as a kid, if you heard about Rosal Avichik, if you even knew who he was, you're like, oh, that's like the Brisker rabbi that went off the Derech, and they call him in a deriding way. They call him JB, not in a nice way. So what he did here was, knowing that Rosal Avichik wasn't necessarily so accepted in the mainstream yeshivish world because, you know, mono-orthodox thought leader in Rosh Yeshiva, he puts in the front over here, under Rav Yosef Ber Salavichik, Hagon Av based in the Boston. What do you think is wrong with that? Rosal Avichik, Hagon Av based in the Boston, the head of the court in Boston. What strikes you wrong about that?
It's
missing his other affiliations, and perhaps his primary, you know, the thing we know him for most, being Rosh Yeshiva at YU. So what he tried to do was to market Rosal Avichik's Torah to the broader yeshiva world. And what he did was he wasn't goris that Rosal Avichik had any affiliations to modern orthodoxy. So that's just like an interesting fact to know about the book going in. But again, I think there's an advantage to this, is that we're just going to see what Rosal Avichik's Torah side is, without all the words like ontological and Weltanschauung and all the fancy schmancy stuff that you see in Lonely Man of Faith. We're going to see his Torah. Okay, end of introduction. What I want to do is I want to look at two pieces. We're not going to go through the entire thing. We have until 9:30, but we'll make use of our time. We either finish before or we finish at 9:30. There are two pieces. I'll just orient ourselves with the sheets. One is titled B'Yisod HaChiyuv de Mikra Megillah. This is just a general piece on understanding what the obligation is to read Megillah. It's a very fundamental piece. And then, if we have time, I think we'll connect it to, just on the back page, B'Chiyuv HaDenashim B'Kriyas Megillah, which is woman's obligation in reading. There's a there's some sort of organization out there called Jewish Orthodox Feminist Alliance. I'm not going to give my political opinions on it here. But they were going all over Facebook with all these women giving tours around America talking about the woman's Megillah reading. Is it good? Is it not good? Obviously, they say it is good because they're feminist. But it's a huge, not just a hashkafic question of whether we want to put women up there at the podium, but there's actual halachic issues with it, halachic questions that someone would need to address as well. And Rav Soloveitchik, I just want to burst your, I'll burst your bubble now, he comes on the more machmir end. He comes on the more stringent end, and he wasn't such a fan of a woman's Megillah reading. Again, despite the fact being the big modern Orthodox thought leader and rabbi, he stood by what he thought was halakhically correct. Okay, one last thing. As you can tell, the sources here are in Hebrew. I understand some of us are more comfortable, some of us are less comfortable with doing straight Hebrew. It would just be way too tedious for me to translate the entire thing. But what I will do is when we read through, I'll paraphrase and I'll translate the sentences as we go through it. Similar to how, like, if you're going to a Gemara shiur, then the rabbi, you know, doesn't necessarily write a whole translation for the Gemara, but he'll translate the Gemara and the relevant pieces as he goes along. So that's what we're going to do. Okay. The staples... are on the wrong side. I wasn't paying attention when I had a few minutes before Shabbos quickly printing and putting this together. But I'm sure if you just look at the page numbers up here, Shin Ayin Dalet, Shin Ayin Hey, you can figure out what comes after the next. Okay, without any further ado, Bisoda Achi of the Mikra Megillah. If I were to ask you...
Got mine right.
Oh, I got yours right.
I appreciate that.
There we go. If I had to ask you, what... How would you categorize reading Megillah? Is reading Megillah more similar to reading the Torah, the mitzvah of reading Torah? Or would you say it's more similar to the mitzvah of lighting menorah on Hanukkah? I'm open to hearing svaras either way. Any ideas? Would you say Megillah, the mitzvah of Megillah, is more similar to lighting menorah on Hanukkah or to reading Torah like we do in Shul on Shabbos? I'll give you a hint. Both answers could be right. You just need to figure out why each one is right.
In one case, you have to read every word. You don't have that with.
Okay, very good. So that's going to be a proof against the Kriya idea, right? You're saying is that for Torah? Is this what you're saying for Torah reading? You need to read every single word inside the Torah. You can't say any of it by heart. But for Megillah, we're like a little bit more lenient on it. We might get to a source later on it. So would you say that makes it more like Torah or less like Torah?
No, but you have to hear every word, though.
Ah, so there's a mitzvah in order to read, to hear
so
it, maybe?
So there's an obligation to perceive things, which makes it more like the lighting of the Hanukkah candles.
Okay, so in what respect would it be like Hanukkah candles? Right, the Kriya Satorah, I think, is the easiest one to support because we're reading something from we're reading Tanakh. When we read, we're reading Torah on Shabbos, and when we're reading Megillah, we're reading from Ksuvim. So that's most intuitive.
You have to publicize the miracle.
Ah, excellent. So there's a mitzvah persume nisa of publicizing the miracle. So the Megillah is not just a din in reading; it's also there to publicize that there was a nes, that there was a miracle. And in that respect, it's very similar to menorah. We're going to get there soon, and we're going to explain that there's actual halachic nafgaminas, meaning there are practical differences depending on if you understand Megillah to be more similar to reading the Torah or more similar to the mitzvah of lighting menorah. But we'll just leave that for now. Look at the second paragraph. V'zeh yishlevar. V'zeh yishlevar ha'di b'shabbos v'chein b'sukkah shak v'tayr b'gemara. So there's a question that comes up on Chanukah, which is when you make a bracha, you say Asher kishano b'mitzvosa v'tzivanu, that God sanctified us and God commanded us to perform the mitzvahs. The thing is, lighting Chanukah is a mitzvah midrabanan. It was only rabbinically instituted. So the question is, how can we say God commanded us? Didn't the rabbis command us to light menorah on Hanukkah? So the Gemara answers, because there's a mitzvah called lo sasur in the Torah, meaning how do we, you know, kicks the can down the road. How do we know that the rabbis have authority to actually make up mitzvahs? Because there's a pasuk in the Torah that says lo sasur, which God gives the rabbis authority to institute mitzvahs midrabbanan, to institute rabbinical level mitzvahs. So it says, it gives that answer when it comes to Hanukkah. The rabbis commanded us to light the menorah, so therefore we light the menorah. And we, it makes sense to say we were commanded by God because we're commanded by God to follow the rabbis, and rabbis told us to light the menorah. The issue is, V'lo matzinu d'shak v'tarya hachi l'gabi ha'bracha al mikra megillah. After God mikra megillah, ina elamid divrayim. The issue is, the shak v'tarya, this question, only comes up in Hanukkah. Why doesn't it appear in Maseches Megillah? Why doesn't it appear in the entire Masechta question of just like Neros Hanukkah were instituted midrabbanan, and we had a question, why do we see Vitzivanu, that God commanded us? We should have the same question when it comes to Mikra Megillah as well. The rabbis instituted Mikra Megillah, therefore there should be a question of how can we make a bracha on Mikra Megillah? So why doesn't that exist there as well? That's the question. So here's, you can tell what I think are the essential lines because I just photocopied, I scanned my version of the Hare Kedem, so you can already see where the important lines are. I don't even need to tell you where they are. This one we need a little background for. I actually was just teaching this to some kids in Ramaz recently. I work there 2 days a week. So they're learning, the 9th and 10th grade learn brachos. And I was working with 9th grade honors, so they're learning the sugya. Thank you. They're learning the sugya for mikra, for kriyas haTorah and birchas haTorah in particular, making brachas on Torah. There's a question. Women don't have the same level of chiyuvim as men in general, right? Women are pater from making a bracha. Women are pater from mitzvah seches magrama, from time-bound mitzvos, and they're also pater. They're exempt from the mitzvah of learning Torah to the extent that men have that mitzvah. There's a lot of details behind it, but just suffice it to say, men have a general chiyuv, an obligation to be sitting down and learning Torah, and women don't have that obligation. So the question is as follows. For us Ashkenazim, there's no issue. The Ramah believes, right, the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch, the Ashkenazi posek, believes that if a woman wants to voluntarily perform a mitzvah, she's not obligated, and she wants to go sit in a sukkah, she wants to go to shofar, whatever it might be, she makes a bracha because she's volunteering the mitzvah. However, according to Sfardim, according to the Chaber in the Shulchan Aruch, women do not make a bracha on mitzvahs that they volunteer. They can volunteer a mitzvah if they want to, but they're not going to make a bracha on it. And it actually makes a lot of sense because we say in the bracha Vitzivanu, and God commanded us. Women aren't commanded in the mitzvah. They're volunteering the mitzvah. The issue is, the Mechaber, the Rav Yosef Cairo, the person who says that women generally don't make a bracha on mitzvahs they volunteer, says that women make a bracha on Birchas HaTorah. That women make a Birchas HaTorah every day. And I think, you know, Marissa, when you went to school, they taught you to make a Birchas HaTorah. Right, so, okay, thankfully Hank knew what they were doing. That's good to know for the community. But I actually met a woman who works with my mother, and she went to school when she was younger, and they did Birchas HaTorah with the boys. They didn't do Birchas HaTorah with the girls. And I don't understand, because it's against the Beferish Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says explicitly, women have to make a Birchas HaTorah. The thing is, there's a contradiction, though. Because didn't the same Mechaber just say that women, when they volunteer a mitzvah, don't make a bracha? And if woman learning Torah is a voluntary mitzvah, why are women making a birchas haTorah according to that same Mechaber? That's the big question in that sugya. And there's two famous answers to this. One is the Magen Avraham, which is a technical answer. The Magen Avraham says that true men are chayiv in Talmud Torah. You know, you have to learn all the obscure sugyos, you learn about kachin, taharos, you get into all these zroim sugyos that may not apply to us here in the States, may apply to us in Israel, but women still have a chiyuv to learn Torah. Their chiyuv, though, is to learn mitzvos that are relevant to them, meaning they'll have to learn Hilchos Shabbos, they'll have to learn kashrus, they'll have to learn basically all the mitzvos that are relevant to them, which is it's a heck of a lot of Torah, by the way. A lot of men probably don't know all those mitzvos. And so women still are commanded in the mitzvah of learning Torah, just not to the same extent as men are. And therefore, the Mechaber is not contradicting himself. It makes sense that women have to make a bracha on the Torah in the morning because they are obligated to learn Torah as a means to be able to perform the mitzvot that they are obligated in. They have to learn Hilchus Shabbos really well, just like a man has to learn Shabbos really well, because women are obligated in the same Shabbos that we're obligated in. But, okay, that's like the most straightforward answer. But then comes along the Grizz, comes along the Briskerov, who was the uncle of Reb Soloveitchik. So just to give the genealogy, there's Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Brisker, he's like known as the founder of the way you go to a traditional Ashkenazi yeshiva today. The way they learn Torah, they call it Lumdus, Brisker Torah, it's founded by Reb Chaim Brisker. He is the grandfather of the Rav, of Reb Soloveitchik from YU. So Reb Chaim had two sons. He had Rav Moshe, who's Reb Soloveitchik's father, and then he had the Brisker of Reb Velvel, who's the Grizz, who founded the Brisker yeshivas in Eretz Yisrael, who's known for that. So the Grizz is Reb Soloveitchik's uncle. The Grizz quotes Reb Chaim, and he gives a different answer. He says, Birchas HaTorah is a unique mitzvah. There is a mitzvah that before you learn Torah, you have to make a bracha beforehand. And it's different, and it's a separate category to itself. Usually we're familiar with, there's Birchas HaNeded, and we make a bracha on things that we benefit from. There's a Birchas Shevach Odah, there's brachas on things that we're praising. Wow, look at that lightning out there. But then there's a separate category all to its own called Birchas HaTorah, which the mitzvah is to make a bracha on a Chefza Shel Torah. Now that's a very Brisker terminology. The most classic terms that you'll hear in any Brisker Torah is either Gavra, man, or Chefza, object. And there's been much ink has been shed on this. Many pages have been spent on it, on these kind of what we call Chakiras. What he does here is he says, women, even if they're not obligated in learning Torah, once they choose to do so, they are obligated to make a bracha because it's a special din in Torah that if you're learning a Chefza Shel Torah, you're reading a Chefza Shel Torah, an object, an entity of Torah, there's an obligation not on you to learn Torah, but there's an obligation on anyone who reads Torah to precede it with a bracha out of respect for Birchas HaTorah itself. So therefore, coming back to here, he answers the question saying, women may not be obligated in Torah at all, but once they choose to learn Torah, there's an obligation to precede the learning of Torah, of a Chefza Shel Torah, with a bracha.
Does the concept of learning Torah require you to read the Torah, or can you learn it from listening to somebody?
Can you learn it from listening to someone? You're saying, would you have to make a bracha on that?
Yeah.
So that actually, since it's a question, Birchas HaTorah, like let's say I'm just thinking Torah, do I have to make Birchas HaTorah on that in the morning? So I think it's a machlokis actually. According to one opinion, you only have to make a Birchas HaTorah if you're speaking out Torah, but if you're thinking Torah, you're not obligated in it.
If somebody says something to you to teach you something about the Torah and you have a conversation with them about it already,
oh, you definitely need to.
Already, so it's almost something that you can't anticipate even happening because you learn from things all the time.
That's why we make it in the morning.
Okay, so that's your argument. That's a good argument to everybody to say.
That's why we open up the Siddur and they put it in the Birchas HaShachar. No, I've had that issue in the past because sometimes when I go to YU in the morning, I go with carpool and I daven when I get to campus. But thankfully, the people that I get a ride with enjoy talking Torah, and we start talking, and I'm like, oh my God, I totally forgot I should have said Birchas HaShachar before getting in the car. So I quickly make a Birchas HaTorah when we're there. So because in conversation, it could just come out. But I want to bring it back. That was all by way of understanding that sugya, Birchas HaTorah. So now answer our question. Remember, what was our question? Our question is, why don't we have the same question that we have from Menorah when it comes to Megillah? The question was by Menorah, How can you say v'tzivanu? How can you say God commands us to make a bracha? God didn't command us. Oh, no, the rabbis commanded us, and the rabbis were commanded to follow the rabbis by God. So why don't we ask that same question by Megillah? The answer is we don't need to ask that same question by Megillah. Because Megillah is a din in Kriya. It's a din in Kriyas HaKsuvim, in reading Torah. Look inside on the top of the second column. V'lo mishum ha-mitzvah d'rabbanon she'esh b'kriyasa. It's because of the Kriyas HaKsuvim and not because of the mitzvah d'rabbanon. When you make a bracha on Megillah, it's not because we're obligated to read the Megillah. It's because before you learn Torah, there's an obligation to precede all learning Torah with a bracha. So we never had the question of Vitzivanu. How can we say Vitzivanu? The rabbis commanded us to read Megillah. No, there's just an obligation. Even if the rabbis never told us to read Megillah on Purim, if you wanted to open up a Megillah Esther later on and read it, you would have to make a bracha, just like a bracha before any learning of Torah. That's why that question never came up. And then look what he does here. Uke'enze hisver maran ha'gon Reb Chaim zechorna lebracha. And then he quotes from the sugya that we just learned outside. Ha'dinashim mevarachas berachas ha'Torah. And this is what Reb Chaim says to explain why a woman can still make a blessing on the Torah. Af l'shitas ha'mechaber. Even according to the mechaber, ha'sover de'im mevarachas ha'mitzah seishas ma'agrama. Di'esherlehen lomar v'tzivanu. Right? Because the woman can't say v'tzivanu. Aye, so how does Mechaber make the Mechayiv in a bracha on Torah? Mishum debebirchas ha-Torah, ha-bracha hi al ha-chefza shel Torah. Because when you make a bracha on the Torah, it's not on the obligation to learn Torah, it's on the chefza shel Torah, it's on the entity of Torah itself. V'lo ha-mitzvah halima, not on the mitzvah of learning it. If you are engaging with the chefza shel Torah, with the Torah, you have to make a bracha beforehand, not because of the obligation.
Wouldn't that say that if you wanted to read the Megillah during the year at any point in time, you'd have to make the bracha on the Megillah, not on the related to the mitzvah?
So you're saying, wait a minute, there's different brachos over here. It's not just the Birchas HaTorah we're talking about here. There's a specific brachos that we make on the Megillah itself, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. So we're about to get there. Turn over your page. Shinai and Dal, we'll actually go straight to that right now. Look where it says Os Gimel towards the bottom. Paragraph that starts with a big gimel over there, and the word ulam. So I think this will hopefully address your question. Ulam, yoyim b'megillah. Let's look in Maseches Megillah. There's a sugya here. This is a quotation from the Gemara Maseches Megillah. Haloi sheshama ashuris yatsa. So it says that someone who has a unique language and isn't necessarily familiar with Hebrew, if he hears the Megillah in Hebrew, even though he doesn't understand what's going on, he still fulfills his mitzvah of listening to the Megillah. Ay, v'halo yadi ma'ika amri, but the Gemara asks, he doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't understand Hebrew. And this could apply to many Americans as well. It's the same question for us. So, midah hava nashim v'amei arts. Maybe he should be treated, but wait a minute. You know, like, how do we expect back then women certainly did not have as much education as they have today, and the children also did not know that much. So, wait a minute. Women and children are chayav in Megillah, so, and they don't understand what's going on. So, what's the question? Your question is broader than that. So, just like women and children are yotzei, even though they don't understand what's going on, anyone, even an adult male who doesn't know what's going on with the Megillah, should be yotzei. Maskifla Rabina. So, we have a question. But we don't even know, even for educated people who know biblical Hebrew, there's still some words in the Megillah that even the rabbis themselves in the Gemara weren't quite sure as to how to translate or didn't know precisely what they meant. So if you're asking that you have to understand every single word in the Megillah, then it's absurd, because then even the great rabbis who instituted the mitzvah won't necessarily be yotzei the mitzvah, if you have to understand the translation of every single word. So what's the answer to the Gemara? Ela mitzvahs kriya upirsume nisa. Hachinami mitzvahs kriya pirsume nisa. The Gemara answers, and this is now where we're going to shift gears, the mitzvah of Megillah is not just about kriya, it's not just about reading the same way we read Torah on Shabbos, but it's a mitzvah in pirsume nisa, which is what you mentioned before, in publicizing the mitzvah. This is what, very important term in Brisker learning, a chakira, which I guess you could technically translate as a dichotomy. The Briskers are very big fans of making dichotomies, that there's always at least two ways to view something. So this is a very, we talked about Gavra Chefsa briefly before, but here's it in front of our eyes, an actual Chakira. Is Mikra Megillah a din in Kriya, in reading the Megillah, or is it a din in Pirsumei Nisa, in making the Nes, and making the miracle publicized for everyone to see? Two different things, two completely different ideas, but both of them are motivating ideas behind a mitzvah Megillah. And there's a very important saying in yeshivas that a chakira without a nafkamina isn't much of a chakira. So nafkamina meaning a practical difference. I mean, we could sit here all day, and it's almost like talking about tamei hamitzvos. When the rabbi gets up there, he gives a drasha, and he says, oh, what's the reason behind this mitzvah? So it teaches us to be good people or whatever. Right? Okay, good. So I know the reason behind a mitzvah, but that doesn't change the laws of the mitzvah, right? So here, depending on what the motivating idea is, what the impetus is behind the mitzvah, there will actually be nafkaminas. There needs to be a practical difference if I say Megillah is more a din in Kriya, or it's more of a din in Pirsumei Nisa. But here's one right off the bat, and this might get to your question. Mispar mi divrei ha-gemara, d'melvad hakim shel kriyas ha-ksuvim, mitzvas kriya yesh b'mikra Megillah. And yesh od kiyam shel kriya b'toras pirsumei nisa. So we have both. We have the mitzvah of kriya and the mitzvah of pirsumei nisa. Ushnei chayuvim heim b'mikra Megillah. Vim keinira del hachim avarim shtei brachos. Now this explains why we make two brachos. Al ha-mikra Megillah, l'kiyam kriya saksuvim, usha'asa nisin l'mitzvahs pirsumei nisa. Right? So we make two brachos on the mikra Megillah. We make one, which is on the kriya saksuvim, and then we make another one, which is Sha'asa Nisim, because there's also Mitzvah Pirsumei Nisa. So this is really great. The brachos actually reflect both aspects of the mitzvah. The reason we have two brachos, according to Rasalavachik, is because both reasons are true. There is a mitzvah to read Megillah, and it's treated like Kriya, similar to Kriya Satorah, but it's also because of Pirsumei Nisa. And because of that Pirsumei Nisa, we make another bracha on Sha'asa Nisim, that God performed miracles. And it fits beautifully with the brachos. But, okay, very nice. So everyone lives together.
Who's the person who's doing the Pirsumei Mitzvah? It's the one who's reading the Megillah.
Right.
But everybody makes the bracha.
So he makes it out loud. And then we're going to be Yotzei with him. Oh, but you're saying, what if I read it on my own, or?
Oh no, that's fine.
So the yeshlis topic. So now, that's kind of like that's a little bit, it's a little too nice. Everything comes together. Everyone's happy. Both reasons are good. You know what? I have a case here. What if I don't have enough money? I'm somewhere in a town, I'm way out in Suffolk County, not much of an Orthodox community there, and we don't have our own Megillah, and there's only a few minutes before we'll be chayiv in it. There's no way I'm going to get over to Plainview, and someone just has his own Megillah. I need to buy it from him, right? I need to buy a Megillah from him in order to lay Megillah for my community somewhere out there in Suffolk County. So am I obligated to go around, knock on people's doors, even though I'm already established, I'm not in a Jewish community, but am I supposed to go around, try to collect money in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah, even if I'm a poor person? So look inside, and we're going to see if you are obligated to go to that extent to fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah. They should stop a lefi mashenemar, but mi she'ein lo Megillah. If someone doesn't have enough money, does he have to go from door to door begging to collect money to fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah? On one hand, there's a lot of mitzvahs out there. We have Pesach coming up soon after Purim, where the halacha is if you don't have enough money for the four cups of wine, then you have to go around from door to door and you have to get enough money in order to afford four koses of wine. Similarly for Chanukah, if you don't have enough money, you have to go around and you have to collect enough money in order to light the neros of Chanukah. So, what would we say? Do you think we should? Do you think we shouldn't? It's probably dependent on this chakira, right? So if we say that Kriyas Megillah is a din in Kriya, what would you say? Do we have to go collecting? Or do we not have to go collecting?
Yeah.
What?
You would have to go first.
You would have to go collecting. What's the svara?
because it's reading Kriya, then because of the Kriya, you have to go collect for, to, in order to read it, you have to read it. But if it's just Pursuma Nisa, then seemingly it could be Yotze Pursuma Nisa, not by reading it from an actual Megillah.
He's saying, well, then how would you be Mekayim the Mitzvah
just
without...
a regular Chumash or something.
Oh, you say, okay, so they're reading it out of regular Chumash, okay.
But if it was just Kriya, then you, if it was only for Kriya, then you, you wouldn't have to go out and collect money because it's separate from, you know, you just said for Pursuma Nisa, you have to go out and collect money.
Right.
So if it's just been in Kriya, you wouldn't have to.
Right, exactly, okay, good, perfect. Is that, do you have a consensus on that one?
No.
No? What do you think?
I thought you could do Pursuma just by reading it out of the Chumash.
Just every in Vachumish. So there is a sugya later on about, let's say you have a full Tanakh and then you have a Megillah in there as well. So that actually comes up a little bit later in this piece.
Yeah.
All right, very good. So there is that idea as well.
I think the concern right now is whether or not Pursuma Nisa is just publicizing the mitzvah in a non-specific way, or in the specific way of reading from a Megillah by a person who reads all the words out loud.
Right, because you're saying, even though the idea is to publicize the nace, it's not enough just to make an announcement in shul in the morning. By the way, guys, we had today's Purim, and the Jews were saved from Haman. Okay, you know, we did our job. We don't need to read Megillah. There's a certain formula how Chazal prescribed for us to fulfill the mitzvah of Pursume Nisa.
At minimum,
right.
On the other hand, what I'm saying is, if you have to do Kriya, how do you do Kriya without the cloth?
Right. Oh, okay, good. So that's why he has to go around collecting for a cloth. Because that's something ideally you'll need.
So if you're going to have a difference between the two,
mm-hmm.
and you have to have a cloth for the reading, then for the Pursume, I would think you didn't need it. Otherwise, there's no difference between the two.
Okay, very good. So, excellent. I think we're actually on the same page here. So let's look inside. So on one hand, do we say it's like Ner Chanukah? Odilma de Iker Hachiyavu Betoras Kriyas Haksuvim, or do we say that the reading of Megillah is a din in Kriyas Haksuvim, a din in reading, just like you read Torah? De Iker Hachiyavu Betoras Kriyas Haksuvim, a din ze Ligach Yuva Lachzer Al Pesachim. There's no din that you have to go running around. If I need to read Torah, I'm not aware of there being an obligation for me to go around and trying to collect the Torah for a sefer Torah. It's definitely a mitzvah to get one, but I don't think there's any formulation that you have to go around to people's doors and collect for that mitzvah. So if we say Mikra Megillah is a din in Kriya, you shouldn't have to go around collecting for a Megillah if you're a poor person. On the other hand, if Mikra Megillah is primarily about Pursume Nisa, in the same way, you have to collect money and raise funds to light menorah on Chanukah because of Pursume Nisa, so too for Mikra Megillah, you should have to do that. So there's actually a halachic nafkamina, there's a practical difference that comes out here. So if I don't have enough money, if I say Mikra Megillah is more about Kriya, I don't have to go collecting. If I say it's more about Pursume Nisa, I should have to go around collecting. This isn't just a bunch of people in the ivory tower trying to figure out an abstract idea, make a nice little Dvar Torah, but there would be a practical halachic difference based on how we understand the impetus for Kriyas Megillah, how we categorize it. We have about under 15 minutes left, so I want to do just one more, maybe like one more paragraph. Which is based on the last piece. And then maybe we'll wrap up a few minutes earlier and any other ideas you have. There's no chiyuv to go till 9:30 mamish. I think as long as we get our Torah in, that's really what counts. Basically, if you look on your sheets here, on the back, I stapled this one a little weird. There's a piece here called Chiyuv of the Nashim B'Kriyas Megillah, the obligation of women in Kriyas Megillah. The background for this is that there is an opinion in Tosos, quoted in Tosos, from the Baal Halachas Gedolos, from the Bahag, that woman, if you see in the first underline, in the first paragraph, Denashim Einen Chayavos El Beshmia Velo Bekriya. So this is this goes along the lines that you were talking about listening versus reading. The general understanding is, you know, let's say we talk about reading Torah and Shul. So what's the reason that in normative halacha, women don't lane Torah and Shul? What would you say? Marissa, you want to?
One reason given is that because it's too embarrassing to admit because it shows that they're uneducated.
So that's a good way to put it. It's a lack of, the term is a lack of kavod hatzibur, which I guess could be construed that way. Right, because it's a similar way that a man's not supposed to have his wife be motzi him in brachos because then it shows that he's uneducated. So it's probably a similar way of thinking. Don't worry, I'll let you get to it if you want. right, so the it doesn't tznius might be it. The term is kavod hatzibur, so it might be a lack of modesty for a woman to go up. But halakhically, a woman is able to go up there, and she could get one of the seven aliyos meikar hadin, meaning just according to strict letter of the law. But the rabbis, is early in the Gemara already, this isn't like a later thing. In the Gemara already, they said it's not kavod hatzibur, and therefore women don't get aliyos. Now, one of the funny things in like the recent feminist movements is that they're saying, "What do you mean? It's a lack of kavod hatzibur to tell us that women can't get an aliyah." So they're saying, you know, it's a lack of dignity for the congregation to say that women are excluded. So there's a lot of literature on there. You can refer to my Weider. There's a lot of stuff in the blogosphere about that. But we'll look at the halachos. That's the ikker stuff. So the baha. So, but what it sounds like is that if a woman shares a similar allegation to a man, just for a technical reason, we don't allow her to lane, technically she should be able to get aliyah, she should be able to lane. So I would think the same thing applies to the reading of Megillah as well.
So,
yeah.
You talked about two different reasons for Megillah reading, Kriyas HaTorah and Pirsumei Nisa.
Yeah.
So we already learned that women are not chiyuv in learning Torah.
We're going there.
Right?
Yeah.
So their chiyuv in Megillah is Pirsumei Nisa. Presumably.
Oh, okay, very good. Okay, so you were already mechaving to what Ramosha Soloveitchik is going to say.
Okay.
But it definitely it flows forth from what we just said, and that's why we're going in that direction. So as Dr. Simser points out, I'll just build it up for a moment, but you got the answer. The Bahag says that women have a chiyuv only to listen to the Megillah, not to read the Megillah. Men have a chiyuv to read the Megillah, women can only listen. So much so that because woman's obligation is only to listen, they can't be motzi other woman in the kriya of Megillah. Because, let's say, for a man, I have an obligation to read Megillah, you have an obligation to read Megillah, we all have that. I guess except for Versa here, sorry. We all have an obligation to read Megillah. So let's say Dr. Simser here is going to read Megillah. I am Shomea Ka'ona. I am listening to you, but it's as if I'm reading as well. I'm fulfilling my mitzvah of reading Megillah through your voice. The thing is, if a woman only has an obligation to listen to Megillah, she can't effectuate a kriyas Megillah. She can't create a legitimate reading of the Megillah. So that means even a woman can't listen to her and be yotzei their chiyuv and fulfill their obligation because she can't create a kriya. She can't create a reading according to the Bahag. Soloveitchik, actually, I read in Rabbi Chaim Jachter, he's a big posek, lives in Englewood or Teaneck area, so he wrote a book called Gray Matter, and he quotes, he says that Soloveitchik paskined that woman should not read Megillah for other women, and it's many years ago when I was in high school I read this, so forgive me if I misremember, but I think Rav Schechter actually asked him about it. He was like trying to push Soloveitchik on the issue. He's like, "All right, Rav Herschel, if you want a heter, I could give you one, but I'm not compelled by it." So this is Soloveitchik. Soloveitchik just believes that the halacha is more that the Bahag's position is more compelling. Now, why is it more compelling, though? Yeah.
If you read it, you're hearing it yourself.
Yes.
It's creating a way for her to hear. So if the other woman is only obligated to hear and the person who's reading is a woman and she's hearing herself,
yeah,
then she's creating the same thing for
So the thing is, it's not about creating a physical voice. I mean, I'm even willing to concede that women are able to lane physically, you know, or whatever the word is for it. You know, women can lane, they can say the words, they can make the sound waves happen the same way a man could do that. It's that they can't create a halachic reading, halachically recognized reading. When they read, it's not called a kriyas Megillah. The same way, you know, in theory, anyone who's not obligated to Megillah. Let's say we had one of our non-Jewish neighbors come in here, and he read Megillah. The voice of the laney is coming out of his mouth, but it's not called a halachic reading of Megillah. I won't be yotze listening to him. So there's two answers. Oh, yeah?
I mean, you could also argue that they have the same level of fear, all the
Right, so that would be the svara, right? The svara would be that, hey, you know, even if a woman can't be motzi a man, we're all on the same level of chiyuv, so maybe we could be motzi each other. So Larry, thanks for bringing that up, because that's dafka the chiddush. The chiddush is, despite the fact that they're on the same level of obligation, they still can't be motzi each other, because what's their level of obligation? It's not simply a qualitatively lower obligation. It's not about being a lower obligation. It's that their mitzvah is to listen to it. It's a joke that they say with the papers in YU. There's the commentator, which is the male's campus paper, and then the Stern, the woman's campus, they have the observer. So everyone likes pointing out, oh, you see, because the men comment and a woman just observes. So it's perpetuating sexist norms. So that's a discussion that still happens. So that's actually what's happening over here, that the men have the obligation to read, a woman to listen. So look in the paragraph.
I think you've got that backwards, though, because
the men are the observer.
No, oh. there's no chachmas involved in just making comments that are stupid. It's better to listen first.
Okay. You see, so the nashim have the chachma. What can I say?
It's also before marriage. That's why it applies mostly in undergrad.
Very good. Okay, so the answer is, there's two answers that are given. One answer is, and this is the one that a woman of the feminist persuasion will definitely not enjoy. Look on the top of the second column. The men have an obligation to read Megillah to a woman. And then skip down to the next underline. For a woman's chiyuv, einan chayavus b'li kriyas hanashim. The woman actually don't even have a chiyuv to listen to Megillah. Let's say that you're, I don't know, somehow you're in like an only woman colony, right? We became very frum, and we not only have separate men's sections, women's sections, we make separate cities for women. And there's a separate city, only women live there, and there's no men around. They will be chayiv in Megillah, because the mitzvah for them is to listen to a man leading the Megillah. The kachayitza ikarat hakanash hanashim yikru l'nashim. And the man's obligation is to read to the woman. I'm not compelled by this, because what I understand is that if the Kriyas Megillah is based off of Kriyas HaTorah, why should Kriyas Megillah be any more have more of a distinction than Kriyas HaTorah? Right? If Kriyas HaTorah is that woman technically could lane just like a man, I don't understand why the takana of Kriyas Megillah would be that women have a different chi of the man. Meaning it would make sense that the same thing would happen here. Woman could really lay Megillah the same way man could lay Megillah. But the rabbi said, Mishum Kavod HaTzibor, woman shouldn't get up there at the bima, and she shouldn't be laying Megillah for the entire community. That would have made more sense to me. I'm just still wondering. I don't understand why the takana of Megillah is any different than Kriyas HaTorah, if it's a din in Kriya. If Megillah is modeled after Kriyas HaTorah, if that's the primary category it finds itself in. However, as Dr. Simser points out, if Megillah is more Idin in Persume Nisa, we have a really good answer over here. You see, the men might have an obligation in Kriya. Where do women, how are the women included in the mitzvah Megillah? What does it say in the Gemara? Afein hayu ba'oso anes, afein hayu ba'safek, whatever the lashon of the Gemara might be, right? So, actually, if you look at what is the reason that women are obligated in listening to Megillah, it's not because, the Gemara doesn't say because they're obligated in Kriyas Megillah, in Kriyas Aksum, in Talmud Torah. No, they're potter from Talmud Torah. We just established that. The Gemara says explicitly, the only reason women are obligated in Megillah is because they found themselves in the same issue as the men were. They were in that same scenario, and they were saved. And because of that, women are obligated to listen to Megillah. What does that sound like? That's Persume Nisa. Now it makes a lot of sense. If women only are obligated to Megillah Mishum Persume Nisa, but men have an additional obligation of Kriya, of reading, of learning, this actually makes a lot of sense with the Bahag, and it fits with what we said before with Persume Nisa. The reason women only have an obligation to listen, according to the Bahag, is because for Persume Nisa, I don't need to read. I just need to hear about the Nase. I need to hear that something happened. But for men who have the additional level of on top of Persume Nisa, of Kriyas Megillah, it's incumbent upon them to be the ones who read the Megillah, who are Korei. And therefore, that's why men are able to read the Megillah and be motzi others, but women are not able to be motzi even other women because their whole mitzvah is shmia. So here's another nafkmina. If kriya sa Megillah is all about kriya, then you have a mitzvah to read the Megillah. If it's about presume nisa, then it's more about shmia. It's more about listening to the nace that happened. And this is Rasalavich, and this explains Rasalavich's position. I don't know if actually this whole shtickel Torah here is the reason Rasalavich gave Rabbi Schachter and Rav Herschel Schachter, but this is purportedly taken from Rasalavich, and I think that's ultimately what his psak was. So, yeah, sorry, I think Marissa was first.
So you're saying that women wouldn't be able to be with other women because there aren't feminine?
So I should say this is only according to one opinion, right? The Bahag is one school of thought. You have another school of thought that, in theory, I think in theory, a woman could be motzi other woman. What?
I think Rabbi Arnold
thinks I wouldn't be surprised if he did. Yeah. So I think in Migdal Oz, is that what they do in Migdal Oz?
I know in
Lindenbaum?
Yeah, Lindenbaum.
Yeah, so that's what they're relying on. Yeah, it makes sense.
So, here's a scenario for you. A man is Yotzi Megillah reading. And then he goes to read for a group of women only.
Yeah.
Who makes a bracha and what bracha do they make?
Who makes a bracha, what bracha do they make? Excellent. I'll have to look that one up.
So I was told by somebody, because this happened to me.
Oh, okay.
I'm the sort of person
running the scenario.
I run around the community and read Megillah all the time.
Wow.
Nobody knows that.
Now the whole world knows.
Now it's all being on Y.U. Torah.
And anybody who's sick, etc.
Or three people
anyway,
listening.
So before we had a second reading, yeah. We used to have a women's reading in my house. So I was told at one point that if I was Yotzi, I shouldn't say I'll make my Megillah.
Right.
The women don't have an obligation I'll make my Megillah, so they should say Lishma Megillah. That's what someone told me.
Ah, interesting. So okay, that's excellent. Thanks for bringing it up. So that actually would fit in. I would question the changing of the text of the brachos.
Yeah, no,
that's highly unorthodox. But
I don't disagree.
But I'll have to look into that. I shall get that into that next time before I teach this one. Thanks for bringing up, Dr. Simser. We are at 9:30, so we'll conclude here. Please feel free to take more food. Enjoy breakfast. If you have any further questions, please ask. If you are ready to go, then by all means. Thank you for joining us.